Best country, India.
Best food.
Mexico.
Worst food.
Costa Rica.
Most attractive males.
Spain.
Most attractive females.
Romania.
Most friendly.
Mexico.
Okay, now this is the big one. You answered this correctly last time, but, you know, we don't know what has happened in your life, so you may have gone to the dark side. If I give you the opportunity to go to a fully functioning Jurassic Park or space, where would you go?
Space.
No, why?
What?
I'm certain you said Jurassic Park last time.
Really?
What has happened in your life?
You're going to have to look that up. I will debate that I said Jurassic Park.
Oh, really? Oh, maybe you did. I'm almost certain you said Jurassic Park, because I remember being like, there's something about this guy I like, and I'm assuming it's because Jurassic Park.
That's funny. I'll have to check on that, because I was just talking to somebody. Where I am right now is just down the road from the Kennedy Space Center, where they launched the rockets.
Uh-huh.
And, so I've been pretty, it's been interesting checking, learning a little more about that. So maybe that had some influence, but I'm confident I said space.
Okay. Oh, maybe you did. Okay, well, I'll listen back to it anyway. I'm disappointed anyway, because Jurassic Park is way better than space. Who's Vikram?
Yeah, well, I'm still tracking him down, but Vikram was what I thought was a friend of mine. I thought he was a friend of mine when I was attempted to live back in the U.S. I attempted to live in Los Angeles to see if I could do it a couple years into my travels, and I met this guy, Vikram, nice guy, and we hung out quite a lot, like every other day. You know, we go, he's an Indian guy who was living in the States for a bit, and yeah, nice guy. He was writing some screenplays. But go have Indian food, whatever. Just hung out. Normal guy. And I decided that living in L.A. or the U.S. was not going to happen. So after a couple months, I packed up my stuff. I was like, I got to get out of here, start traveling again. I needed to sell my car. Vikram wanted my car. I sold it to him. We agreed on the price. He gave me a little bit up front, and then I left LA, and Vikram disappeared. Never paid the rest, never heard from, totally disappeared.
When was he supposed to pay the rest?
He was basically, I guess a little fuzzy now, but he was basically going to send me the money, like, afterwards.
Okay.
I mean, over the few months later. If I remember correctly, it was like a few months later, he was going to, I would have the rest of it. And, you know, we hung out, I mean, okay, we only knew just 2 months, but still, we hung out quite a lot, and I knew quite a lot about him, which turned in my favor in the end, but like I knew quite a lot about him, and or from what I thought, and it seemed like a good deal.
So I assume now Vikram's gone, you're not getting your money, so I suppose you just move on with your life, Earl.
As you should, but since I decided that LA wasn't for me, the US wasn't for me, I kind of was thinking, you know what, I gotta get it back out there. Still in my early days of traveling, where I really didn't have much of a purpose to my travels or any reason for going anywhere. I was just kind of like, I just want to travel. And I guess since I'm a terrible decision maker, I one day was thinking, I got an idea. Why don't I go get my money from Vikram in India? And the reason I thought this was a good idea is because over the course of meeting him, he told me all about this, where his family lived, where his hometown is. He told me all about his friends who are part of this, like, pretty popular band in the state that he's from in India. And he told me all this stuff, so I felt like I knew the place that I could show up. I could get to his family's house, explain the situation, and get my money back. So it seemed like a pretty reasonable idea. Since I had no other reason to travel, I figured, why not? Let's go with that one.
Mm-hmm.
Where his state was, it's sort of in the remote northeast corner of India. And the closest way to get there flying, like major city, would be Dhaka, the capital of Bangladesh. So I flew there from Bangkok, and I flew first to Thailand, hung out with a friend, then flew to Bangladesh. And that's sort of when it all began, is when I arrived in Bangladesh, with the goal of getting my money.
There's one line in the blog that I love, and it goes, "With the style of a secret agent and the mentality of a bounty hunter."
Yep, well, Didn't last long. Didn't last long, but that was the general idea. I was pretty excited. I was like, I had never actually, at that time, I hadn't really been to, I'd been to Southeast Asia and stuff like that, but this was by far the first time getting into sort of more remote developing countries that, let's say, or parts of countries They weren't very used to travelers, so it was an eye opening experience. Pretty much as soon as I arrived in Bangladesh.
And what is your mood? Are you sort of laughing along, being like, "Oh, this is funny that I'm doing this," or are you like, "I am getting my money"?
No, yeah, I was just like, I was pretty confident I was getting my money. I was like, "I'm going to get my money. How hard can this be?" I was like, "I just got to show up where it was. I got to explain the situation to his parents, who he told me about." And I mean, obviously, they're going to be like, "Well, that's crazy. So here's the money." And since Vikram disappeared, I thought, well, there's a pretty good chance that he's there. So I'll just go get the money. What can they say? Yeah, I was just totally confident. I was like, "Oh, I'll hang out in Bangladesh for a bit. I'll cross the border way out on the eastern corner of Bangladesh into his state in India," and I was like, "Yeah, I can get my." I just didn't even occur to me. I wasn't like gung ho, like putting on camouflage or anything like that. But I just, my very very basic plan of flying to Dhaka, traveling across Bangladesh, going to his state, and finding his family and getting the money. That just seemed. I didn't really see any issues with that. I thought it would be pretty smooth.
So we land in Dhaka in Bangladesh.
Yes.
So what happens?
Well, we landed in Dhaka a little bit later than the flight was scheduled. It was sort of supposed to be a daytime flight from Bangkok, but as I learned later with Biman Bangladesh Airlines, they tend to get delayed quite often, and we arrived late at night. And unfortunately, if you read at the time, any guidebook, it would say if you arrive after sunset in Dhaka, Bangladesh, stay in the airport until sunrise and then go outside.
Oh, really? So, it's like a known thing.
It was at the time, so it was so at the time they've cleaned up quite a bit and it's a lot more organized and a little bit better. But at the time, let's put it this way: I remember I showed up at immigration and I had the guidebook and I had the sheet from that showed that it was like the U.S. a visa for U.S. citizens was $20, and the guy just charged me $50. And I'm showing him this, and he's like, "Nope, it's $50." I'm like, "But it's supposed to be $20." And basically, I had to give him $50. So, like, that was my first indication. I was like, "All right." And
we're in for a fun ride.
Yeah, and then I just kind of got through immigration, got my bag, and I was like, "Well, what the heck am I going to do here all night?" I was like, it's a tiny airport. I was like, "There's nothing here." I was like, "How bad can it be?" So I went to the exit, and that's when a couple soldiers who were just hanging out by the exit door, they came with me, and I was like, this is weird. And there was a gate in front of the exit of the airport, like right outside the exit of the airport, of the like the customs of the terminal building, was this gate, and you had to go through it. And basically, the soldiers came, and there was a big padlock on it. They unlocked it. There was all these chains. They took the chains off, let me out, and then they locked it back up again. And I was like, "All right." And there I was, just kind of standing there by myself in this very dark parking lot in front of the airport. Which time I had about a bunch of taxi drivers came running up to me, and they all gathered around, started yelling, basically trying to get my business, I assume. Only one guy spoke a few words of English, and pretty much they're pulling on me and saying, "I'll tip, blah, blah, blah," trying to get me to follow. And finally, I just chose the guy who spoke a few words of English. He took me all the way across the car park, showed me his car. I got in the back, and then before I knew it, two other people got in the back seat, one on either side of me. They locked the doors, and a couple other people got in the front. And there I was, wedged in a taxi with five guys, and off we started driving into the night. So that was sort of the moment I was like, "Okay, something might be going on
like,
here."
Did you think this was like, because you know, like some, I think when I was in Colombia, like they're sort of like shared taxis, or did you know right away, like, "Uh-oh"?
Oh no, I knew uh-oh, basically, because the other people that were in the taxi were also some of the people that were trying to get me to use their taxis. They were part of the taxi driver. So I was like, "Oh, why were they in the same taxi?" And there was no other passengers around, basically, apart from on my flight there. It was all pretty much, from what I gathered, Bangladeshi people who had family waiting for them there. So they were fine.
So what's going through your head now? Are you like, "Holy shit"?
Yeah, I was kind of just like, "Okay, this is weird." So I just kept repeating and showing them the address of the hotel that I wanted to go to. And they just kind of ignored me for a while until we pulled into the petrol station. And they filled up the car, and then they demanded that I pay for the petrol. I was like, "Well, why am I paying?" And they're like, "No, you pay. I couldn't get it, so I thought, well, maybe that's how they do it. I pay now, they need the money, and then they take it out of the fare at the end. So I paid for it. But then we kept on going, and basically they did not take... They did not take me to the hotel that I wanted to. They basically said they weren't going to do that, and they took me into, all I know is we pulled into the city center in what is still to this day the biggest slum I have ever seen in my life. Wow. The streets were just covered in people sleeping outside, carts and tables everywhere, like rickety wooden tables with people sleeping on them, families all outside, no covers whatsoever. Like, it was unbelievable.
That's my first time like a film.
Seeing something like that. It was out of a film. And they saw me, a couple people saw me in there, and they came up to the car and was staring through the window. It was really out of a film. And we drove through this slum, and he stopped in front of just a total nondescript building. Just, there was nothing to it. And it had sort of like one of those metal garage, like storefronts that you pull up to open, like the sort of the protected, I don't know what you call them, covers that you roll down at night to protect your storefront. And he kind of knocked on that, and the driver disappeared for a bit, came back, and they demanded that I pay each driver some money, and I kind of argued, and we negotiated. Eventually, I paid each person in the car some money, and then they took me inside, and basically, for the next pretty much 3 days, they kidnapped me, kept me hostage in two different places, kept me locked up in the room, and they basically would take me out every day to ATMs and try to get me to take out my money from various ATMs, at which point I would just type in the wrong PIN code and tell them that it wasn't working, and then they would just take me to another one, and I just kept doing the same thing, and it just went on and on and on for a couple of days.
So what did you do apart from being taken out to try and be robbed? Like, were you just sitting in there the whole time?
That's the thing. The first place they took me, they put me in there, they locked the door. I mean, granted, it was the middle of the night, and then basically I was in this disgusting room with it was straight out of movies. And someone posted the story on Reddit at some point, and 50% of the commenters were like, "That there's no way that happened." And I understand that it seems absurd, but like, really, it was cockroaches all over the room. And in the morning they came, they took me out, and that's pretty much all they did. Like, we went to a bunch of banks, and then we weren't going to the banks. First of all, Dhaka, Bangladesh, it takes like an hour to just go down the street. I mean, it's so much crazy. We were going in they were taking me in rickshaws and stuff like that. So it was really bizarre. And then, they would just bring me to the room.
What were you like mentally at the stage? Was there a thought that you're like, am I going to make it out of this?
The first night, I was like, this is crazy. I was like, yeah, I was a little bit nervous. I'm thinking, how am I going to get out of this? And I had no idea. The second day, they came, picked me up with my stuff. They took me to another building, brought me to another place. I put my stuff into the room there. Then we went out again. Then we came back. And then by that point, I was like, well, this is ridiculous. They obviously have no idea what they're doing. Like, they have no weapons. They haven't really threatened me with any harm. They haven't taken my backpack. I mean, they could have just taken my backpack. They didn't even take, like, they kept asking me to give them money they never took my wallet or anything like that. Like, you know, they weren't very, I was like, something's weird here. This is definitely their first time doing this or something like that. So
you're the game by that pick. Point, I was next like, time okay. Be perfect.
Yeah, exactly. Well, they needed a few more practice runs. But, but yeah, so I was just, so by that point, I was like, okay, this is crazy. They have no idea what they're doing, you know. By the second day, I was like, okay, this is just going to end at some point. This is kind of ridiculous. Like, they're not very smart. And then it did end, basically, on the third day. At one point, we had come back from going out to another bank, and the guy said to me, can you just run up to go to your room, basically, get your backpack, and come back down. We're taking you somewhere else. And I said, okay, whatever. So I go up to the room, there's a couple floors up. I grab my backpack, I'm coming down the stairs, and I see down the end of the hall on the floor above the ground floor, there was like an open door kind of thing with an escape, basically steps that were leading outside. So I was like, all right, well, I'm out of here. And I ran down the hall, down the steps. I jumped in a bicycle rickshaw, showed him the address of the original hotel I wanted to go to, and off I went to the hotel that I was trying to get to 3 days before. So that's kind of how randomly all came to end. I still had my stuff. I ended up losing a couple $100, but that was about it.
Yeah, well, God, it could have went so much worse, though. But I love how you finished that piece on your blog. It goes, I grabbed my backpack, ran down a side alleyway, out a back door and into the streets of Dhaka. I then went for some lunch.
Yeah, and then right. That was the first thing. They did feed me. I will give them that. But very, very basic stuff. That was the funny thing is they would take me to like a super localist place that like street food kind of stuff. And then the guy would ask, like, do you like this? So it was very bizarre in that. And then they would try to get me to go to an ATM right after to take out all my money. So I don't know what they were doing, but once I got out of there, I was out of there, done, and and just like that, it was over. Okay, and so, I continue with my plan.
Yeah, this is the thing that I think is so amazing. Like, again, this is just one of my favorite stories. But even after that, are you like, oh, I better go back to Bangkok or go back somewhere civilized?
Yeah, I was like, well, I come all this way, and that I mean, I got out of there with really just losing a couple hundred bucks. So I was like, well, I might as well get back to the mission at hand and continue. I was like, I'm in Bangladesh now. I might as well see something and continue. At the time, I was like, I don't really see any reason to stop with the plan. It would have been different if it was more traumatizing, where they had, you know, I don't know, had weapons or kept me in some dungeon or something. But in the end, I was like, wow, that was kind of the most ridiculous kidnapping possible. So wasn't so bad in the end compared to how I assumed they can go.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I just figured I'd continue.
So take us on from our journey. What happened after that?
So after that, I did spend a couple weeks traveling around Bangladesh. Had a great time. Really nice. Beautiful country.
Yeah, I was going to say, Bangladesh is a lovely place.
It is a lovely place, like especially out in the countryside. Like, Dhaka's insane. I mean, that's an insane city. That place was pretty intense. But as soon as you got out of that city, it was just beautiful with all the tea plantations and the jungle out there and just small little towns you can bike around. Really cool. Really nice people. Yeah, it was great. Definitely great. Have you been?
No, I've never been. No. Would you recommend it?
I would recommend for something interesting. Yeah, it's really interesting place. And these days, it's a lot. It is a lot more organized than it was back then. Back then, there was nothing. I mean, I was sleeping in like 60 cent per night closets were basically the rooms. But like now in like some towns, they had like just the most basic accommodation you can imagine. Now they've gone a little bit step up. They're getting a little bit of a trickle of tourists now. So it's a little bit more, a little easier, a little bit, yeah, not as intense or intimidating. So, but it was fun. Yeah, it was a great time. Like I said, people were super nice once you got way out in the middle of nowhere and stuff like that. And I traveled across and I made it to the border crossing.
Something to add to the CV. You started a ceasefire.
I did. That was pretty cool. That was I had read about it, that there was some fighting at the border, which apparently is still continuing now. They just, not really like intense fighting. They just kind of shoot across the border at each other, the Indian and the Bangladeshi side, sort of disputed borders in that region. And so I had showed up and it was a really nice guy at the border agent on the Bangladeshi side. We had some tea. We talked a bit. Showed me how there weren't very many people crossing that border at all. And when it came time for me to go, they had to basically blow a whistle and stop the fighting. And they called out to so that the Indian side saw. And they stopped the fighting. They stopped the shooting. They opened up the gate. I got to walk across the stretch of no man's land till I got to the Indian side, checked in on the Indian side, and then I left, and then the shooting was able to continue. So that was very, very kind of them to stop for a moment so that I could pass.
So we're on the bus now to Shillong.
Yep.
You enter, this is Vikram's little village or town.
Yep.
Are you like really excited, or has this journey,
yep.
Are you just
point,
in a different
like,
world after
great.
This journey?
I was like, well, first of all, that was like, I was like, this is great. I'm in India. And I was like, this is my first time in India. I was like, this is cool. This, everything's great. I'm on the bus. I'm like, look at this. Plan is proceeding as I had imagined. So I was like, I'm almost going to be
really,
there.
Really? You imagined like, all this?
Well, not that it was, no, just that I was at least got to the next step. I didn't imagine all the adventures along the way, but I was like, well, I crossed the border, the remote border crossing. I got to India. I'm on my way to his town. So this is how it was supposed to be. And, yeah, so I arrived there and I checked into a place. I was like, all right, I might as well go get my money. So I went to this, it's pretty funny actually, I knew the name of his friend's band. And so I went to the market.
What were they called?
They were called Mojo Meghalaya. Meghalaya is the state that they're from. And they were called, and it, first of all, I show up in this town. This is my first experience in India. I'm like, here we go, crazy India. And everybody in this town, it was like, they were serving hamburgers and pizza at the restaurants. Everybody, people had dreadlocks and tattoos. It looked the most non-Indian place I've ever seen in my life.
Wow.
All the buildings looked like New England style buildings in the US, like just brick buildings, like stuff you just don't see anywhere else in India. And I learned later it's because it was the most remote area, so that's the first place that the missionaries went. So that influence had a huge influence there. But yeah, I went to the market. I found a guy selling cassettes. I was like, hey, man, have you heard of this band Mojo Meghalaya? He's like, Yeah, they live right up there in I'll never forget this, Latham Kraal, which was the neighborhood of the city. They live in the house right next to the fire station. I was like, all right, well, I took a taxi. And a few minutes later, I'm in front of their house. That was it. I was like, well, this is ridiculous. So I knock on their door, and pretty much his friend answers. And I was just like, I'm Vikram's friend, and here I am. And they were like, Vikram, oh, man, how's Vikram? Like, and they started asking me all about Vikram. And it was pretty funny. They were pretty shocked. And I was like, oh, that's kind
of
weird. Why are they so
shocked, Earl?
Yeah, but, you know, sometimes people might show me, oh, I'm so-and-so's friend, and, you know. But that didn't happen. They were pretty shocked. So I hung out with them for a little bit. They invited me in, and, pretty much we hung out. And next thing I know, man, it was crazy. All I know is over the next day or so, I ended up in Vikram's house. He wasn't there. I met his mother. I met his brother. I was like in his house. I was stood at one point. His mom gave me a tour of his house, and I was in his bedroom. It was just nuts. And I'm starting to, I'm getting some idea that something's off though. And I was just like, what's going on? Like somebody, everyone was talking as if like they knew Vikram, but like they hadn't seen Vikram in a long time. And it turned out a lot of stuff came out eventually. What actually happened is they called a two-day strike. So, like, there was a two-day strike by a local student union. This story is all over the place, I recognize. But a local student group called a two-day strike, in which case nobody was allowed to be outside for 2 days. So Vikram's friends were like, hey, man, let's go. We're getting out of here. We're going to the countryside. Go camping. I was like, cool. We went out into the countryside. I'm with his friends. We're in this beautiful scenery. We're camping. And that's when I learned all about Vikram. The truth about Vikram, and it was a lot different than the Vikram I had come to know while I was in Los Angeles.
Let's tell us about Vikram.
So it turned out people hadn't seen Vikram for at least 3 years, including his family. It turned out he had actually spent time in a prison in Calcutta for smuggling weapons into India. I heard that when he was in the prison, he had joined this crazy militant group, then he actually escaped from prison and somehow got to the U.S. Nobody's too sure of how because they haven't really been in touch with him. But that was more of his background, and it sort of started to make a little more sense when I started thinking of Vikram. He always wore, you know, just the clothes. He was always wearing military boots, which I thought was weird in Los Angeles, but he would always just say like he loved military boots. He always wore these like very dark clothes and kind of always, yeah, he did have a little bit of mysterious air to him, but just, I don't know, I guess I didn't notice it at the time. So it turns out that he was a convicted felon, basically, and had escaped prison in Calcutta. So I learned all that during the 2 days that we were basically out camping. I was out camping with his friends in this beautiful part of the country.
Insane.
It was insane, and that's pretty much when we came back after the strike was over. We came back, and his friends were like, oh, man, like, they were like, oh, we're going to go to some party later on tonight if you want to come hang out, stuff like that. And I was like, yeah, okay, I don't know, I'll see. Let me rest at the hotel. And I got back to my hotel, packed up my stuff, and I was out of there. I sent them a quick message. I was like, sorry, I got to leave. And I got on the first bus out of there. I was like, you know what, that was a pretty cool adventure. I don't need to get involved with anybody who's escaped from prison in Calcutta for smuggling weapons. I'll let him have the $2,500 or so that he owed me. And I'm out of here, and that was it.
Oh, Earl, that is just one of the greatest stories known to man.
It was nuts. I mean, I know it sounds all pretty crazy, but it was just one thing after another.
It's so good. It needs to be a movie, Chasing Vikram.
Chasing Vikram, that man, that's not a bad one. Oh, you have no idea, man. It involved I was on the rooftop of a. This is ridiculous, but I was on the rooftop smoking with the mayor of the town at one point, their town.
He was topless as well at one point.
Yeah, the guy, the mayor. The mayor just comes out of this big house, there he is. He's just like this shirtless guy, and he's like, he knew the guys in the band. I was with Vikram's brother as well, and they were like, yeah. Next thing you know, we go to the roof of his house, we're all smoking, and I was just like, this is crazy. Like, it was just, any weird thing that could have possibly happened all happened crammed into those few days, and at the end, I was like, that is more than enough, worth way more than the money. And yeah, that's good for me. Let's go see what the rest of India has to offer. Hey, this is Earl from WanderingEarl.com, and my travel confession is when I actually was hanging out with this group of people in India, chasing Bikram's money, when we were driving out to the countryside, they gave me a mango to eat. And it was actually the first time I had ever eaten a mango. I had no idea what to do with it. It was about a medium-sized mango, and I actually kind of looked at it, felt it, tried to take a bite of it with the skin on. I was like, oh, something's weird here. And I just like, maybe you just put the whole thing in your mouth. And I put the entire mango in my mouth with the skin on it, completely blocked my whole mouth. One of the guys turned around and was like, what the heck are you doing? I was like, I realized right then that it wasn't how you eat a mango. And I just said to him, oh, this where I'm from, this is how we eat mangoes. And he just looked at me like I was a complete moron. And I paid for it later because apparently sucking on an entire mango is not good for your stomach. And I actually, let's just say probably the worst stomach disaster I have ever had in my life was a result of that in their car, in the tent, and yeah, in a field, in a guest house, all over the place. It just wiped me clean, that one mango. And yeah, that was an unfortunate experience. This is Wandering Earl, and you're listening to the WorldTravelGuide.net podcast. To meet people. The more people we meet, the more we learn about the world firsthand, and, you know, the more life-changing experiences we're going to have, the greater understanding we have about situations that are out there, instead of just relying on media or secondhand information to make our judgments and beliefs about the world. It's the best education that you can possibly get.